Talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. Fighting tyranny and government overreach. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Welcome to the Mark Morano Show, coming at you on TNT Radio. Well, this has been a huge week. I have been just blitzing the airwaves and dealing with special reports on this France flight bans, 2.5 hours or less banning. I talked about this last week a little bit, and I even did some Morano minutes on this as well. But this story has blown up now internationally. Spain, Austria, Germany, other countries now looking at this. Greenpeace is calling for an EU-wide 6-hour ban on flights 6 hours or shorter. This is truly what climate lockdowns look like. This is truly what the Great Reset looks like. It's happening. It's here. And we have to deal with it. So I was on Fox News. I was on Newsmax. I was on One America. I was on The First TV on their climate communism special, which I even told the host, Jesse Kelly. And a few years ago, I would have been uncomfortable calling it climate communism because you'd look like a red baiter and you were just being alarmist. But actually, since March of 2020, you know, and seeing just the naked agenda of what they're proposing, climate communism is not a incorrect term. It is actually a very apt term, and it is incredible how language has shifted. I mean, that would have been that was an extreme comment or extreme label a few years ago. So let's get right into this. Let me just show. I'm going to play you clip 8. This is me on Fox News, Fox News Tonight, the old Tucker Carlson slot, which again, sad. This is the Tuckerless TV show with host Joey Jones. And this is how the week led off for me.
Climate extremists are determined to ban everything from cars, cows, and gas stoves to save the planet. Now France has just banned short-haul domestic flights, but the ban is only for commercial airlines. The ultra-wealthy, they can continue to take short flights on their private jets. Mark Morano is the publisher of ClimateDepot.com. He joins us now. Mark, thanks for joining us. Break this down for us so we understand. Did France do anything of value here?
Well, what France is doing is leading the way for the climate net zero agenda. We already have Germany, Austria, Spain. These are all countries that are following suit. Greenpeace is calling for an EU-wide ban of flights up to 6 hours in length. This is the new reality of net zero as it's actually being implemented. You will go nowhere and be happy. This is happening all over the world. Bloomberg News just did an article about cheap airline travel. Is it basically a thing of the past, you know, because of, quote, climate compliance laws. So this is happening globally. We haven't banned them here in the United States, but we can certainly see airline prices going up. It's going to be a venue for the rich private jets. They're not going to face these restrictions.
And that was on Fox News Tonight. I've also done a slew of radio and other TV interviews. This story captures the imagination of people because it's real. It's what I was warning about since March of 2020. You can go back, I think it was March 9th. I was on Ezra Levant, Rebel TV, railing about Donald Trump, lockdowns, COVID. March 9th of 2020, days, weeks before they even declared the 2 weeks to flatten the spread. And this is what was the likely scenario. The COVID lockdowns would lead to a version of climate lockdowns. This is it. They're going to start limiting the train travel. They're starting to limit our agriculture. When I say starting here in the United States, it's already much more advanced in Canada, Australia, Europe. John Kerry has put this into the targets. We'll talk about that a little later of the United States. And it's a complete justification that we are in a crisis and we need it. Now, when I went on Newsmax and I said, the fix is in, they're abolishing the middle class. They're treating us like the unwashed masses. And think about it. You have people like Elon Musk, who is a big part of the establishment, who's got a lot of good qualities as well. However, he's pushing a universal basic income. And why was he pushing that? Well, when you have sort of an oligarchy, and you have the top, you know, not even 1%, the top 1/10 of 1% owning so much. they don't want a thriving middle class, because a thriving middle class is going to conflict with their agenda. Again, 2.5 hour flight ban, that's conflicting with your climate agenda. So instead, they crush the middle class. So you have two classes, the uber wealthy and the very poor, or the working class. And what do you offer the working class? You offer them government handouts. You offer them guaranteed annual incomes. That's called a caste system. That's called a neo-feudalism, if you will. This is where we are headed. Absolutely where we are headed. So I said in explaining all this, it has become like a religious fanaticism. They're doing it to achieve sort of a Garden of Eden utopian vision. They're imposing a religion on us, an austerity upon us, their vision imposed upon us, bypassing democracy, same way they did with COVID. They're collapsing our energy, our food, our transportation, our free speech, all done through corporate government collusion, mostly, almost entirely, without an ounce of democracy, just like COVID lockdowns. They closed schools, churches, work, issued stay-at-home orders, canceled weddings, funerals, medical procedures. All of this was done without a single vote of parliaments, of legislators. They were done through emergency decree. Our public health bureaucrats have declared this an emergency. Unelected bureaucrats deciding lives that we had never experienced outside of wartime. The greatest expansion in tyranny of government in peacetime, probably in Western history. Well, now what they've done, when they shut all this out without a single vote, all because a, quote, virus demanded it, so they claimed. Well, now they changed the word virus to the climate demands it. So instead of saying a virus demands it, this is a viral emergency, it's now a climate emergency. And that is the key. So every time you see one of these protesters, be it in Europe or the United States, and they're defacing art, they're blocking traffic, they're spray painting a building, whatever they're up to, they're all similar in one vein. They're all declaring that we need to have a climate emergency. We need to declare a climate emergency. That gives presidents, prime ministers, 130, at least in the United States, 130 new executive powers, a la COVID, more bypassing a democracy. And relating it to this flight ban, we have people like Eric Holtice, a climate activist, who says, in a declared climate emergency, you know, you can only fly when it is, quote, morally justifiable, unquote. So do you get that? It has to be, in other words, if you apply to your betters at the government, and I'd like to go to Florida for a trip. And what is this trip's purpose? Well, I'm going on a vacation with my family. Ah, no, you've already exceeded your carbon. Then in a climate emergency, we cannot allow that. My uncle died. Oh, uncle died. Show us the paperwork. I want to see a death certificate. You might get approved for a funeral, but you sure won't be approved for a vacation unless it's your first vacation in about 7 years on a plane. This is the mentality. You don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. In 1975, John Holdren, Obama's science czar, lamented that energy that was too cheap, too plentiful, was the biggest problem with America. And he lamented that people in 1975 could hop in their car, go to a grocery store, get a six-pack of beer, and drive on home. This disgusted him. The idea that this was excessive, it was wasteful, it had to be regulated out of existence. And bingo, here we are, regulating that kind of behavior by banning gas-powered cars. Think of COVID, stay-at-home orders, essential services only, essential workers, essential trips. We had, and I played this clip a couple weeks ago, we had Deborah Birx, actually. So it actually wasn't a Biden. It was actually probably Donald Trump, or at least from Trump, because she could have preceded Trump as well. But Deborah Birx actually saying the United States during COVID should have done exactly as Italy did, where we would literally be locked in your home except for 1 hour a week, and you'd need paperwork to go to a grocery store to get your groceries. And it would have to be fully allowed by the government. You'd need permission-based society. Now, obviously, climate is not that extreme yet as we were during the heights of the COVID lockdown, but you see exactly where they're headed with this. 2.5 hour flights. What's most shocking with this 2.5 hour flight ban, as I've been doing this in writings and radio and TV, is there is a certain segment of the population that feels extremely comfortable and assured of themselves to say, well, you know, that's just ridiculous. People shouldn't be flying when they could drive or take the train. It's just, it's a much shorter trip. That makes perfect sense. It's not that big of a deal. What's the big deal? I mean, I wouldn't even be going, I would never take a plane flight. It's so much easier to take the train or drive. I wouldn't want to go deal with the hassle of airports. That's not the point. They're banning it. They're telling you that. And by the way, French government was looking at a 4-hour ban and they knocked it down to 2.5. We should be like, oh, master, thank you for being so generous. They knocked it down from 4 hours to 2 hours. They were going to ban flights up to 4 hours to save the planet, which, by the way, they admit fully won't even affect the French emissions because it's insignificant in terms of emissions of CO2, but it's huge in terms of inconvenience. But if you go on these websites and read the comments, people are saying that over and over. I've seen it on What's Up With That. I've seen it on Joe Nova. Certain different commenters just saying, oh, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? So what? This is not that. It's who wants to fly for that short a time anyway? It's a hassle to go to the airport and park and get into some security. That's not the point. These are being decided by someone else. You're not getting a vote on it. This is done for an absurd, insane, neo-religious reason to somehow save the planet. This is what we are dealing with. And this is, it's just incredible because little topics like this really do touch a nerve with the public. And it really shows you what happens. So along these same things, I gave an analogy about how this is also related to these 15-minute cities in Oxford. And other places in Europe where they're experimenting. The idea is you have everything you want in 15 minutes and there's no reason to leave your sector. And I likened it, of course, to just generally to East Germany where you needed, you were trapped in the country, walled in with travel restrictions. And of course, I've also likened stuff to East Germany where, you know, the United States is banning gas-powered, you know, the Western world is trying to ban gas-powered cars, including the World Bank, including corporate banks. And their government is basically saying there's only one government-approved car, the electric vehicle. Well, in East Germany, you had only one government-approved car, the crappy East German Trabant. And that's what we were dealing with there. So we are really, as time goes on, it gets worse. And I got some blowback and some comments on Twitter, people saying, like, how dare you? You didn't need a permit to travel in the country. I was making a broad analogy about 15-minute cities. The idea is you're going to be trapped where you are, very similar to the East German walled-in society under Erich Honecker, their old leader. Anyway, okay, this is clip 4. This is smart cities where your government becomes your stalker. This is a little bit about, and this is in the same vein as banning gas-powered cars, affecting your freedom of movement. This is in the same vein as limiting your flights and making flying a thing of the past only for the wealthy. The old seaside vacation will now become a thing of only the wealthy, like it was 100 years ago, as average Americans and average citizens of the world won't be able to afford it. So this is how smart cities work. Clip 4.
Everywhere she goes, Ouyang Haoyu is followed. What she buys, how she behaves, is tracked and scored to show how responsible and trustworthy she is. It's called the social credit system, and in one version now being tested, a person's reputation is scored on a scale of 350 to 950. And Haoyu, with a good score of 752, is okay with it. In fact, most people are.
It's a mechanism, like, pushes you to become a better citizen.
It's big data meets Big Brother, expanding how the government monitors, understands, and ultimately controls its 1.4 billion citizens. Thanks to advances in artificial intelligence and facial recognition, and a web of more than 200 million surveillance cameras.
Are people bothered by privacy concerns?
We think a lot of camera keep the safety. It's really good. We can accept it.
Companies are experimenting with the algorithms to help the government create the new national social credit system. The government also has pilot projects. In one, citizens are required to do hours of unpaid work to get benefits. And scores are docked for things like littering, a messy yard, gossip, even jaywalking. Video of offenders is shown on the local news. And information collectors like Zhou Aini are paid to report on their neighbors, her quota, 10 entries a month. Like the man who carried a drunk person home. A good deed, she says. Good social credit gets rewarded with perks like cheap loans and travel deals. But a bad score means public shame and worse. Huang Huijun lost a court case and didn't pay. Now he's on a government blacklist. I can't buy airplane or train tickets, he says. And the list goes on. Being discredited makes it hard to get a job or put kids in top schools. The social credit system will go nationwide next year, and few here are willing to criticize it, something that may pose a risk itself for a bad score and the life that comes with it.
Wow, 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 wow. And this, of course, with this tracking through your digital ID, when they do their smart cities and you're limited into your sector, this is how they catch your violation. I should do a whole show just on this. I did a whole chapter, by the way, on the Chinese social credit system in my book, The Great Reset, as well as how it ties to ESG. And you could even hear the whole idea. If you don't score well, you don't get loans, you don't get access to stuff, you don't get to travel. That's exactly what they're doing in the United States, in the Western world, mimicking the Chinese social credit system of this system where you better be a good citizen as defined by the corporate government collusion, or you're not a free citizen. This is 21st century tyranny. No other way around it. And of course, this is where this is ultimately leaving. You'll go nowhere. You'll be monitored. You'll be reported on. The other chilling thing here that echoes back to COVID lockdowns was how you're required to report bad behavior. By the way, this was NBC Nightly News. This wasn't, I didn't just play you an Alex Jones, you know, clip or something. This was the NBC Nightly Newscast, okay? Just so you know, this is mainstream, corporate, not obscure. I'm not just playing you some conspiracy video of some kind and like exaggerating anything. But the shocking thing about this video was they said they had to report, was it 8 to 10 incidences of bad behavior? So it basically rat out your fellow citizen. Well, think back to COVID lockdowns. Remember, snitches get rewards. Los Angeles Mayor Garcetti reporting on your neighbors. If they had house parties, you could shut them down. If they had backyard barbecues too big, you could literally get them fined, your neighbors fined, and you could get their utilities shut off, their water, their electricity, for not being good citizens. And that is why they need to declare an emergency, because they can accelerate this Chinese-style social credit system. Remember, the whole ruling class elite, from the New York Times to the United Nations to academia to people like Justin Trudeau to Obama, Biden administration, have all praised China's one-party authoritarian rule as an enlightened group of people, as the way to move forward, and they hate the messiness of democracy. So it's scary stuff. All right. Well, I have to take a break. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Stay tuned, because we got some fun stuff ahead. This be right back.
TNT Radio's Alan Miller.
Let's get those interest rates up. Let's get those impositions on people. Let's not have a solution to productivity. Well, they're all at it. The Bank of England doing the same old thing again and again. The International Monetary Fund, the organization with the biggest flaws and fatalities to its record and name, weighing in, a bit like they all did when they had the coup against the elected representatives who did try and change things or did not win the public over to their arguments. They said the markets wouldn't put up with it. And here we are again, Groundhog Day. What are their solutions? Raise interest rates. We've had some more quantitative easing, haven't we? Printing money, the magic money tree. And in America, we're seeing this big discussion about whether the debt ceiling is going to be raised. What's it going to mean for us all? Where's the public within all of this? What about our needs, our interests?
Alan Miller and today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
When you can point me to an industry, to a platform that reaches 250 million people a month, virtually 9 out of 10 Americans, that's real, that's substantive, that's important. And that reach and that touch point and that daily reinforcement It's an amazing place to be able to communicate messages. That's massive.
To find out more, go to tntradio.live. This is the Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back. Mark Morano here. Well, this idea of being forced to go along with a collective or you don't have rights as a citizen, as a business, access to money, this is being actively implemented by our equity asset firms, including BlackRock and Vanguard, State Street. This is a clip seven. BlackRock CEO Larry Fink explaining how you have to force behaviors to make change. And he is, of course, goes to companies, denies them loans, denies them all sorts of financial setups and arrangements favorable unless they play ball with their unelected agenda. So this is Larry Fink.
Well, behaviors are going to have to change. And this is one thing we're asking companies. You have to force behaviors. And at BlackRock, we are forcing behaviors.
And they're forcing behaviors. Now, the good news is, and this is the big news, we have stockholders and oil companies now fighting back against this whole green ESG agenda. We have the state attorney generals from Florida through Louisiana to Texas across the country suing equity asset firms like BlackRock and State Street and trying to stop this ESG, the idea they're imposing their agenda without a vote. In other words, you can have John Kerry come up with a climate pledge and he'll get the CEOs of these companies to sign it. And then the CEOs, feeling, of course, that government pressure, force the companies to go along with it. You have people like Larry Fink, who very powerful. State Street and BlackRock are larger than the United States economy combined when you add up their equity asset, the value of these companies. Controlling a lot of it is controlling many people's retirement accounts. And if the people knew how their money was being spent, and this is how you get the woke agenda, transgenderism, how you get the critical race theory, how you get the climate energy cult behavior. They're forcing these behaviors upon us. And again, force is what they know. Force is the way that they have to do it because they know they could never get this through democracy. And this is a great clip. This is clip two. This is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talking. I was just talking about how the COVID lockdowns, how they bypassed democracy. Well, people will say, well, this, we had no choice because we were in an emergency and you had to toss out the Constitution. I heard that many times. This is an emergency. You don't have freedom of speech. We have to go after misinformation. You don't have freedom of movement. You don't have you don't have a freedom to make a job. You don't have freedom to go to church because churches had to be closed. You know, sorry, it's just, there's an emergency. The Constitution's out the window. Well, here's Robert F. Kennedy Jr., clip two, explaining why that's bunkum.
So the Constitution did not put a pandemic exception in the Constitution. The Constitution was written, they wrote it for hard times. They wrote it no matter what. You know, you can't suspend the Constitution for any reason. Doesn't matter if the country's falling apart. You can't do it. Doesn't matter if people are dying. You can't do it. The rights are, you know, there was a generation in 1776 who put their lives, their fortunes, their reputations on the line and their livelihoods, their property, in order to give us those Bill of Rights. Once a government takes a power, it will never give it back voluntarily. That is a rule of political science. And the other rule is that every power they take will ultimately be abused to the maximum extent possible.
Well said. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I love that when he actually says, no matter how many people are dying, no matter how bad the times are, you cannot put an exception to the Constitution. And of course, this is why ultimately most of the courts sided, at least, well, I shouldn't say most. Yeah, it took 2 years for one Trump-appointed federal judge to strike down the mask mandates. Then you had the CDC telling tenants, ordering landlords not to collect rent from people. I mean, this became a dystopian America throughout this whole process, and the idea of these endless lockdowns and church closures and school closures. I hope things have changed. I don't expect, I do think there will be continued to be a pandemic exception in the Constitution as we go forward. But it's a incredible thing. But this is how they did it, through fear. The whole idea of scaring people enough to allow them to give in to your tyranny, that's what it was done. So how did they do this? It was corporate government collusion. This is clip five. It's a minute clip of all of the corporate media just in government officials parroting this line when they were pushing vaccines, and not just vaccines, but just the idea of nobody is safe until we're all safe. Clip five.
We want to make sure that people can discern the truth from the misinformation. And we want to make sure that everyone understands that no one's safe till everyone's safe.
No one is 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 safe.
Nobody's safe.
No one is safe.
Nobody is safe.
This is a post 9/11 axiom. Safer, but not yet safe.
No one is safe. No one is safe. No one is safe. No one is safe from COVID-19 until everyone is safe.
If the whole world isn't safe, none of us are safe.
No one is safe.
No one is safe.
Nobody is safe
until we're all safe.
Health experts have been saying nobody is safe.
Nobody is safe until everybody is safe.
Nobody is safe.
The science is clear.
None of us are safe.
There is no safety.
No one is safe.
No one is safe.
No one is safe.
No one is safe until everyone is safe.
No one's safe.
Nobody is safe.
Nobody's safe.
No one's safe.
We'll never be safe
until we're all safe.
We are never going to be safe.
99.5% of people are safe and will survive COVID-19.
The only positive thing out of this is we should be able to manufacture a lot of vaccines, and
nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated.
You don't have a choice.
As long as not everybody is vaccinated, nobody will be safe.
Normalcy only returns when we've largely vaccinated the entire global population.
Boo bleep, boo bleep, boo bleep. Almost, I mean, not almost, every single thing you heard was a lie, was an unelected bureaucrat, deep state, corporate government, fascism, lie, 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 lie. The idea that a virus comes along and no one is safe till everyone is safe, there goes back to the idea I said about Deborah Birx putting everyone locked in their home except for 1 week, 1 hour a week when you had a government permit to go do essential grocery shopping only. That's frightening stuff. That's massive collusion on a scale. Those are all mainstream sources. You heard the voice of Deborah Birx, of Bill Gates, of George W. Bush, one of the, I don't even want to talk about the Bush family and Cheney. I mean, just utterly disgusting. And I now include Pence along with that in there. Pence, by the way, is completely in love with this whole agenda. He just did his recent book, Mike Pence, talking at great length, bragging about getting 3M and getting a partnership with the government and 3M to get masks out to people so we could mask up those kids, bragging about how he worked to get ventilators in all the hospital that later were resulting in up to 70% death rates, completely unnecessary ventilation, and hospitals later admitting they did it because when the person's on a ventilator, they're no longer able to spread a virus. They did it to protect staff. They were killing patients. And Mike Pence, 3 years later, writes a book bragging about how he got ventilators, completely unaware of any of this information. And he's now running for president. Like I like to say, he shouldn't be allowed to be dog catcher ever again, let alone any elected office. And I don't know why I picked dog catcher, because dog catcher actually requires a lot of skill. And they have to go after angry animal, aggressive animals and everything else. And they have to have some talent. Anyway, so this idea that nobody's safe is part of where I just played you the clip earlier of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talking about the pandemic exception. Like, this is so unique in world history that no one's safe. So we just need to lock everyone down and everyone needs to be a good team player and you need to go along with it. And we're just like the Chinese NBC Nightly News video, the Chinese social credit system about smart cities and locking people in and surveillance and reporting on your neighbors, you have to go along to make this work. You just have to go along. And it's frightening stuff. It's absolutely frightening stuff. Well, in Coffs Harbor Council, they had a public hearing. Huge crowd of people turned out to oppose plans for it to become one of these 15-minute cities. And here's the clip of that. This is a just, again, all part of this idea. The reason we're doing 15-minute cities, the reason we have, we're talking about pandemic exceptions of the Constitution as what they're pushing, is because they think we face a viral emergency in the case of COVID and a climate emergency in the case of climate. This is clip six. This is what's the news report about the crowds turning out to oppose the 15-minute cities.
Mounting concern over Coffs Harbour City Council's move towards 15-minute cities, but some residents say the plan amounts to restricting freedom of movement.
There has been a public backlash to a new vision outlining the future of transport in Coffs Harbour.
15-minute neighbourhoods where all the essential services and all the facilities that you may need to visit would be within 15 minutes.
Councillors caught off guard by a large public turnout to a series of recent council meetings with residents calling for answers.
A little bit surprising that we had a full gallery.
The council says the main goal is to reduce our dependency on the family car. The plan to install more footpaths and cycleways, thereby reducing our carbon footprint.
Anything that requires larger than 15-minute radius commute would obviously have an impact on the pollution that occurs from the vehicles.
But some are concerned the proposal goes too far, potentially restricting freedom of movement.
License plate reading. Are you going to be tracked everywhere you go in order for them to administer a carbon credit system?
Coffs City Council has downplayed the concerns and denies the plan amounts to over-surveillance.
It's not a lockdown mechanism and it's not a observation mechanism at all.
The council is now reviewing a big public response during the draft exhibition period.
We receive a whole ton of submissions on that.
It's posting security guards at council meetings and insisting people register beforehand.
And we have questions and we'd like the council to engage in conversation, and they don't seem willing to do that.
Liz Penny, 7 News.
Wow, that's Coffs Harbour, Australia. And that's, again, it's happening in Europe. It sounds so wonderful, 15-minute city. I'm very impressed that, A, they had to post guards that they feel threatened. I know that sounds bad, but they need to feel outrage from the public. They need to feel it. It needs to be palpable. People need to overrun these meetings. They need to go into the night. They cannot allow this. This is the line in the sand right here, right now. When your town council, I mean, we've already, of course, crossed other key lines like the COVID. March 2020 was the true line in the sand that we literally poured water and then put a vinyl slide on and said, come on through. So we've crossed that. But right now, when you have someone proposing a 15-minute city, and they're actually talking about over 15 minutes increases your carbon footprint and we must stop that, and even bringing up pollution. We have radically improved in the Western world pollution, air quality, water quality. To sit here now at the margins and claim that we're going to have these incredible, since the first Earth Day, radical improvements. I mean, 90%+ improvements across the board. Even fossil fuel plants have much lower emissions and cleaner air. I mean, the Western world has really cleaned up its act. And for them to sit here and say that you getting in a car and driving more than 15 minutes from your home is verboten, and they're going to have monitoring and surveillance and tracking and fines and some kind of social credit system. Fight this, fight this, fight this, fight this, fight this at every possible level that you can. This is what we are up against. This is where the rubber hits the road with these 15-minute cities. And I was explaining to you last week about how they do these fact checks on any claim that, say, a conservative, a libertarian makes. And I think the one of the things, and I was telling you the trick to figuring out how they do these fact checks, and the fact checks can be great sources of information. In fact, in my book, The Great Reset, I cite the fact checks on things like 15-minute cities, on things like the pandemic planning, the event 201, where they did the simulation of pandemic events. Because what they do in these fact checks from the corporate media and government corporate collusion, they come up with absurd claims like, oh, they said they have a two-headed monster, but that's not the case. And then they give you the facts, which are pretty much what everyone says they are. And that's exactly what happened when climate lockdowns in Oxford, UK, Oxfordshire, UK. The U.S. credit system, they seek to cut car use, strict rules on car journeys to meet these net zero goals. Well, they did, Oxford itself did a fact sheet to set the record straight. And in their fact sheet to set the record straight, they basically admitted everything that the critics had been saying. But again, the deflection that they do is they make up absurd claims that so-called critics are making, and they easily pat those down. They call it misinformation, and then they bury all the information into the actual report. So it's really creepy stuff, but this is just about what they're doing in Oxford. The 15-minute neighborhoods aims to ensure every resident has all the essentials, shops, healthcare, parks, within a 15-minute walk of their home. The aim is to support and add services, not restrict them. And so what's frightening, under the traffic filters, they're calling this, you know, this limit, this sector, a filter, residents will still be able to drive to every part of the city at any time. But in the future, at the times when the filters are operating, you may need to take a different route using the ring road if you want to travel by car. And they go on here. This is creepy stuff. This is in their fact check to say it's not that bad. Oxford residents and residents of the surrounding villages will be able to apply for a permit to drive through the filters up to 100 days a year. Oh my gosh, I was totally wrong about this. This is fantastic. I was misinforming the TNT audience about 15-minute cities. They can leave. All they had to do is apply to the government. Let me read it again. Oxford residents and residents of surrounding villages will be able to apply for a permit from the government to drive through the filters up to 100 days a year. Wow, how generous. Do you think there's any chance, I don't know, say a year from now, 6 months from now, maybe 2 years from now, where they might turn that 100 days a year permit into, you only get 5 days this year. I'm sorry, there was a hurricane in Australia. It was really bad. So we're going to tighten up our emissions here. Sorry, this year you're going to actually get 2 days and there's a waiting list for the permit. Sorry. This is the freaking fact check of oxford.gov.uk telling you it's not what the critics are saying. Look, people can leave. They can drive around. 100 days a year, you need a government permit that has to be approved. This is nuts. Anyway, sorry. All right, I'm calm. I just get so angry because if someone else were doing this, like on a NBC Nightly News, they would just say, of course, the city of Oxford debunked all of these things and issued a whole fact check. And they'd put up some headline. Oh, wow. So it looks like the critics are wrong again. Read the effing fact check. It literally admits everything and makes it even worse than I imagined. So that's the other thing. Fact checks can actually... Again, in my book, I use the fact checks, particularly on the pandemic exceptions, pandemic simulations that they did the decade before. And it's amazing because it's like, no, we didn't do XYZ, which like, well, no, I never claimed you did XYZ. That's the stupidest thing. They found some bot tweet or someone on a comment section and they turn it into misinformation by conservatives or by, you know, by anti-climate campaigners. Anyway, so this is nuts. It's coming. This is the Mark Morano Show. No, that's not nuts. The Mark Morano Show is not nuts, although I do sound nuts. Sorry to get so excited. I just get so, it's the smugness and the arrogance of this whole thing. And I guess it's still frustrating me that the great middle has not woken up. Most people are just not aware of what's happening around them. Anyway, Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We'll be back after these messages.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
I ain't saying he's a vax victim, but he ain't laying down no tracks, is him? For those who aren't aware, on April 12th, singer, actor, entertainer extraordinaire Jamie Foxx's daughter, Corinne Foxx, issued a statement on Instagram revealing that the actor was on the mend facing a quote-unquote medical complication. Production on the movie he was filming, Back in Action, was shut down and resumed on April 13th using a stand-in for Jamie on set. Since that date, all we've had are secondhand hearsay statements such as Martin Lawrence saying, I hear he's doing better, but perhaps Steve Harvey's quote gives us a clue as to what really happened. I don't even really know what happened, man, Steve said. I was just stunned because Jamie's fit, so I hope everything works out. I'm pretty sure it will. Well, we hope so too, Steve, because Jamie is quite an entertaining talent. But is he one of the people who have been permanently injured by these illegal, immoral, and unscientific gene jabs? Only time will tell. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
It's not a Snapchat seat, a trying to find the sunnies in your handbag seat, or a hi babe text to your girlfriend seat. It's not a brekkie on the run so you could sleep in seat, or a seat for making awesome videos of yourself.
Where are your earrings today? Do you like them?
It's a driver's seat. If there's someone or something that needs your attention and it can't wait, pull over first, because no one's driving if you're distracted. A message from the Government of South Australia.
You're with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Again, I just get really worked up over this because it's, to me, so obvious, but it's so good, so deceptive, high-level propaganda, and it's done all the time. And again, if you want to see like the whole video, audio I just played you, of course, there's a video that goes along with it, but about no one is safe. We're all in this together. 2 weeks to flatten there. Everything is just designed to manipulate and control you. And of course, this is the history of the world. So I don't want to act like this is not, we're unique. I mean, we're unique in our countries and in this Western freedom experiment that we've been under. As Milton Friedman once said, the last 150 years are a rare exception in human history. Most of history, most people have lived under tyranny and dictatorship. And yeah, we are the exception. And so in that regard, I just hate to see this evolving in that direction, because unlike those living in the Soviet Union and Germany in the 1930s and 40s, well, I should just say Germany, there's no allies to come rescue us. The people that were victims. Of course, the Soviet Union took another 50 years before it fell. And I don't even know what, yeah, I guess that's a dictatorship now under Putin, but it's still not free. And of course, they don't have the culture. In China, of course, a whole nother example. I mean, you know, I remember it was Kim Iverson who said the people of China probably don't see themselves as oppressed. And that's what's scary about tyranny in many ways, is that once you're in your little box and you're no longer able to fly, and all the flights are banned, and you're in your 15-minute city, and they've taken away your 100 days and reduced it to 2 days a year and a long waiting list to get out of your 15-minute sector. Will people feel oppressed, or are they just going to feel like this is life and, hey, at least I got my 15 minutes and, you know, my walking? And then are they going to reduce it to 10-minute cities or something? It's just frightening stuff. And that what's really scary was with the NBC News clip, that whole social credit system and how that's been accepted in all the businesses and all the entertainment. There was a pitcher in Toronto who came out and did a retweet of someone calling for a boycott of Target because of their toddler displays of transgender, etc. At any rate, he got such blowback from his corporate team and from the whole LGBTQ community, he had to come out and back away, and he issued, it looked like a hostage video about how he has been educated and he's being reschooled and he's going through sensitivity training and he's so sorry for retweeting what he did and he understands it's an assault to the LGBT. Just a man who literally lost his testicles as he was speaking. I mean, I think they shrank up. I think he went through a transition as he gave this speech. Maybe I'll have the audio next week. I mean, they literally, you could hear him shrinking as he talked. All right, I'm getting too graphic here. Anyway, moving along. John Kerry, I will lead this in. He is talking now. He has launched his huge campaign to start limiting food. Now, remember, food restrictions started. Remember, Sri Lanka was the model of the world, the highest ESG score, just an incredible nation. The world's going to follow up, World Economic Forum touting the utopian vision. Of course, the country collapsed. The presidential palace was overrun. The leader was run out of town. Still, the whole idea of limiting agriculture is alive and well. The Netherlands, they're trying to close up to 12,000 family-run small independent farms in favor of big corporate agribusiness. We'll get to that. But John Kerry, here's John Kerry talking, first of all, about the climate crisis, which then leads to why we need the the restrictions on food. So this is John Kerry, clip one.
In a recent NBC poll from August, voters ranked climate change as the fifth most important issue. It was behind democracy, cost of living, jobs in the economy, immigration. I mean, can you make the case for it being number one, or how do you see that?
It is an existential issue. Mm-hmm. It is an issue where people today are dying. 15 million a year die because of the lack of air quality. 10 million people are dying every year around the world because of extreme heat. It's getting hotter. There are going to be more intensive weather events, and it will cost us an awful lot more money. So as that happens, as people see their farms, you know, the crops ripped away or their homes destroyed, you watch the pressure grow. And I believe we're in a transformational moment. I think this will be one of, if not the, but it'll be one of the top three issues in the 24 presidential election. No question in my mind.
All right. Well, we'll get to the next clip. It's going to be John Kerry talking about food. But just to pause there a moment, he's claiming that heat kills unbelievably and painting this picture that heat waves and people are dying. Just to give you an idea, a Lancet study, since 2000, 85 times more UK excess deaths than cold deaths, number one. Globally, they've looked at heat deaths versus cold deaths. And cold is at least probably 10 to 20 times more cold deaths than you'd get from heat deaths. So if you are under a man-made global warming or just in a natural warming period, you're going to get less climate-related deaths because winters are going to be warmed enough to relieve the death tolls. And by the way, there's a little thing, an invention called the air conditioner, which reduces and can almost eliminate a lot of heat deaths. But guess what John Kerry's also going after? Air conditioners. Guess what climate agenda has in its targets? Air conditioners. It's incredible. Cold kills much more than heat. And also remember that climate-related deaths have dropped 99% since 1920. Dramatic falls. So the idea that this is, we gotta pass some law by the government and cool the earth. First of all, that's, anyway, absurd. So this is John Kerry now, clip zero. John Kerry, limiting on food production. This is him laying out the vision.
Agriculture contributes about 33% of all the emissions of the world, depending a little bit on how you count it, but it's anywhere from 26 to 33. And we can't get to net zero. We don't get this job done unless agriculture is front and center as part of the solution. But with a growing population on the planet, we just crossed the threshold of 8 billion fellow citizens around the world. We just crossed that in this last year. Emissions from the food system alone are projected to cause another half a degree of warming by mid-century on the current course that we are today. A 2-degree future could result in an additional 600 million people not getting enough to eat. And you just can't continue to both warm the planet while also expecting to feed it. Doesn't work. So we have to reduce emissions from the food system to keep the 1.5 degrees alive. Why do we have to keep 1.5 degrees alive? Because scientists, as a basis of physics and mathematics, not ideology and politics or party labels or anything else, as a matter of physics and mathematics and some biology and chemistry, have told us these are the consequences. And we already see it happening. And almost everything they've predicted for 30 plus years now is coming true. But the problem is it's coming true faster and bigger than was in fact predicted.
Wow. All right. Let's start with what he said about scientists as a matter of physics and chemistry and facts. He's talking about this 2-degree, 1.5-degree temperature goal by the United States. And this is incredible because he should know better. We know for a fact that this entire 2 degrees temperature is not from physics. It's not from science. It's not from chemistry. It is, quote, pulled from thin air, according to the scientists who promoted this. And one of them was Phil Jones, who actually wrote that in the Climate Gate email chain about that this was literally pulled from thin air. Roger Pilkey Jr. has analyzed 1.5 the temperature target. Essentially, no science behind it. More grounded in political aspirations than science. And I have a whole section in my book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, that goes through this. Phil Jones, of course, said pulled from thin air. And then we had a whole host of other scientists involved with the United Nations admitting that they had nothing to, that this had nothing to do with science. Ted Nordhaus, William Nordhaus, 2 degrees C temperature target was by his own admission an arbitrary number. They call it the 2 degree delusion. It's an unrealistic climate change target. Leonard Bergstedt, European climate scientist, the so-called temperature target has no scientific basis, but is merely a political tool. And of course, this is what John Kerry, so this is what he's basing it on. And if you heard what he said, agriculture, our food production is going to be up to half a degree of warming. We have to do something about agriculture. Well, why not? You're collapsing energy. You're collapsing our transportation system with airline flights and banning cars. And you're banning our free speech if we want to, you know, say something about it. Why not go after our food supply? And by the way, COVID magically helped that. We had the supply chain problems with the beef and cattle. I'm watching Yellowstone, the TV series. And they said that, you know, there's a part in there where they're saying, where do you see American cattle raising in 50 years from now? And it's not going to be in America. They said, we'll be outsourcing it just like everything else, like just like we did manufacturing with China. We're going to be outsourcing our cattle production to probably the Southern Hemisphere, probably South America and Latin America, but not in the United States. Because of why? Same reason we're outsourcing our manufacturing base. We couldn't afford to do it here anymore, the regulations. And that's exactly what they're going to do. What John Kerry is saying in a very simple terms is we need a government regulatory takeover of our food production system. Make no effing mistake about it. John effing Kerry is exactly saying that. It's exactly what their intent is. They're going after nitrogen-based high-yield agriculture because it creates nitrous oxide. Scientific American even said if we eat too much meat, our urine will create nitrous oxide. So our urine is now creating a climate emergency. John Kerry was talking about agriculture and beef. They're going to go after methane, which means they're going after high-yield agriculture and they're going after our meat eating. But here's the kicker. Just like in the Netherlands, you're going to have climate compliance costs. John Kerry will tell you, no, the farmers just need to get this technology to adapt and lower their footprints, carbon footprints. What farmers are going to be able to afford that? Do you think it's going to be the family-run, small, independent, generational farms that can absorb the cost? Or is it going to be Bill Gates, America's largest single farmland owner, followed closely by China owning American farmland, followed by all the big agribusiness corporate that are going to go along with the BlackRock ESG agenda? Gee, what's going on here? And are we really going to save the planet by gutting the American farmer? Wake up. Wake up. That's all I can say. You've got to wake up. This is so slow motion train wreck element to it. And again, it's not as though they're going to shut down food. They did an article recently about, you know, blame rice for global warming. Rice production is to blame for 10% of the global warming emissions of methane. Rice can't be ignored. And what I said was, this isn't about shutting down rice per se. It's about the climate agenda from the UN, the World Economic Forum, academia, the corporate world. They're identifying every facet of modern society as being a climate problem that needs managing and a takeover, whether it's transportation, airlines, cars, meat, agriculture, even free speech. They have to protect us from misinformation because it's so dangerous. They're, by creating this climate emergency narrative, they can literally have the justification to take over and manage. Remember the pandemic exception that RFK Jr. said didn't exist? Well, the climate emergency exemption doesn't exist either. They want a managerial revolution, putting themselves in charge all aspects of modern society. And guess what? We're generally allowing this to happen. And I'm disappointed in Trump and DeSantis. I just don't know that they even get the big picture of this story. So, okay. I only got about a minute and a half left here. So I was going to play you one thing about how they build this consensus. This is clip three. This is a scientist explaining how you get climate grants for study in academia.
If I wanted to do research on, shall we say, the squirrels of Sussex.
Oh, it is? Oh.
Okay. What I would do, and this is any time from 1990 onwards, I would write my grant application saying, I want to invest in.
Yeah. Oh, this is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
And that way I get my money. If I forget to mention global warming, I'm going to get my money.